You're tuned to KBOO Community Radio 90.7. Coming up next on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews Portland abstract painter Judy Cook about Portland in the 1960s and 1970s, design and architecture, and her method idea of solving a painting like a problem. First, an important message.
Tune in to KBOO for the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, Tuesday, July 2nd through Sunday, July 5th. From noon to 10 p.m., we'll be broadcasting live from the festival. Oregon Community Media stations in Ashland, Astoria, Bend, Cottage Grove, Newport, Salem, and Warm Springs will also be carrying the festival, as well as KBOO in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis. So tune in July 2nd through the 5th, noon to 10 p.m., for the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival on Oregon Community Media and your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol's silver screen can't tell him apart at all.
My name is Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Judy Cook. Her show of recent paintings, Choose, opens on July the 2nd at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery and runs through August 29th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Judy.
Thanks, it's nice to be here.
So you're an abstract painter. You paint a lot on wood. You have many different shapes to your pieces and many different surfaces. When people go into the Liz Leach Gallery, you're in the back room, the second room. A lot of the pieces are quite small. Let's talk about one that kind of jumps out. It's called Nostalgia.
Nostalgia is actually one of the bigger pieces in this show because most of the work, I would say, is fairly small. It's about 36 by 34. All of my work has been on wood panel for quite a while. And the shapes that are in my pieces come from forms that I do a template. And the template's just out of cardboard, but I'm fortunate enough to have Chris Gander, a friend that is also an artist and sculptor, and he makes the forms for me to my specifications. But I never know when I get the forms back what the painting itself is going to be until I start working. Nostalgia is a 2014 piece, and probably unusual for me in the respect that it was a couple of years working on that piece. And there are several paintings underneath it that I took off with an electric sander so that the piece has a kind of debris feeling to the surface. But at that point, when I took the surface way down, I painted in a very large shape, and there's some kind of grid work in that piece that also shows up in some of my other work.
So it's a large square. It looks kind of beige or cream.
Yeah, color. It's kind of creamy.
There's a kind of a black shape dominating the middle. It looks like a fish hook.
Right.
And then to the right side, there are pencil marks. There's sort of lots of,
the painting, pencil marks. This painting has a kind of strong diagonal in it. It doesn't show up so well in reproduction, but when you get up on the diagonal, the whole right side of that piece was painted in kind of a warm gray. And I put a lot of pencil mark into that. Now, why was I doing that? Really, the reason for that painting is really that I see a lot of splits happening in painting from the standpoint of what drawing is and what drawing was in the past. It's a mark, but you can use it a lot of different ways. And painting has really gone in a pretty different direction. There's still obviously a lot of painters very involved with drawing and find it very important. But I was thinking backwards and forwards on this. And that split came from a painter I've really admired for a long time, who's a California painter, William Wiley. And Wiley had a painting where he had divided a canvas from one corner to the other, and one side was completely filled with pencil, and then the other side was paint. And it was a different direction from what I took in my painting. But maybe that kind of fishhook shape, or maybe a sling that's in there, is some kind of comment on maybe the weight of one side of that painting to the other.
Mm-hmm. And you say paint drawing has changed a lot, and painting has changed.
I think there are a lot of people doing a great deal of work that doesn't necessarily rely on having a background in drawing. I went to Boston Museum School for 5 years and had a grant, and I was in Europe with my husband, who was also an artist. And we grew up with a very strong tradition of what drawing was. So I think...
What was drawing then?
Drawing then was really founded on the Beaux-Arts. And it meant, just to give you an example of, you know, Boston Museum School in the 60s, drawing was 5 days a week, 3 hours a day. And that was a foundation program that you really showed up for those classes. Very hard work, model, you know, and there were always problems to deal with. But, you know, they were very less concerned in the 60s, the early 60s. They're not really concerned with your own ideas much at all. They're really interested in seeing that you have the equipment when you get out of the school. It wasn't so much a private, personal experience with your instructors. I mean, they were the knowledgeable ones, but your peers became very important. And the other thing that was very important to me was that the Boston Museum is right next door to the school itself. So I spent a great deal of time in the Boston Museum. And you learn more, I think, from painting by looking at real painting. Mm-hmm. I don't learn a lot about painting looking online.
Did you see this shift in painting as well at the same time? Was there a change in what painting happened later?
I was a printmaker when I graduated from school. So I really only had about one painting class when I was at Boston Museum. But I realized after I got out that there was actually that I had what I needed, and it was just a question of really getting into a studio. One thing that the school gave me was a studio practice. So you keep sketchbooks. I have sketchbooks going back to 1964 that, as I get older, are really kind of a wonderful, you know, series of things, because I can open them up at different places and see ideas that I rejected or didn't, you know, was not concerned with.
You still look
at
them?
And pull at it. Yeah, I pull them out.
What kind of books are they? What brand?
They're a huge assortment of different sizes. Some of them have grids. Some of them are not any bigger than the palm of my hand. Most of them, I would say, are not over about 8 inches. So they can be stuck in a bag. You can take them with you.
But they were proper artist sketchbooks.
Not always, no. Some of them came from, there was a period where Art Media was here before Blix. And they had a lot of very small sketchbooks that came from Japan that have since sort of disappeared. It's an accumulation of different kinds of sketchbooks.
Another painting here is called Tangerine Celebes. You did it this year. It's oil and wax on wood. It has a big orange tangerine colored, kind of like a U with a gray piece intersecting it, and a
right.
Looks like a black shadow.
Right.
But these are very abstract images.
Right.
Are you thinking figuratively at all when you make something like this?
The big orange shape, which came very late, it was a previous painting that was a big disappointment, and I painted it out. I wanted to keep all of those grid lines. I love grids, and I use them in a very loose kind of construction way. It was a painting that kind of came about after Nostalgia. The painting wasn't solved until I threw this orange shape in, but that shape occurred in two other paintings that are not in the exhibit. The form itself, when I first looked at it, reminded me a little of a book. It's not in perspective. It's like this big slab of orange, but it's a transparent orange. And when you really get into a painting, you can have a lot of ideas that are perhaps visual images in your head, but abstraction takes you in a direction where, in the end, you've got a painting in front of you and you have to solve it, and it's a problem.
Is that the verb, solve?
Solve, and architecture is the other part of that. It's a problem. I think the earlier process with painting is there's a kind of personal response or ideas that are floating around that you do small drawings for. That's what I do. And I kind of start there. It's never quite realized, usually at the beginning it's coming about, just because you're painting and overpainting and maybe painting out. Sometimes you put them aside. I use an electric sander sometimes because I don't like the image anymore. So there's a lot of removal of stuff sometimes before I find what I actually want to do. Nostalgia is kind of peculiar in respect that they're parts of like three or four paintings probably in one painting. I kept the palette for that particular painting is very low key as opposed to Tangerine Celebes. The more recent work has sort of come up in color a great deal for me. It's usually about the scale of that color and how big an area of color is there. The Tangerine piece is really about a transparency too.
What is Celebes?
Celebes refers to a Max Ernst painting that was he painted it in 1921. For anybody not recognizing it, you can find it very easily on the net. It shows a kind of headless figure with a surgical glove leading what looks like an elephant. The elephant is in the upper left-hand corner as an elephant in the room. I thought that's perfect. It's not really an elephant that I've got up there. It's a gray area that was left from an earlier painting. My eye kept going to this dark corner. That's where the big orange transparency came in. That painting is a problem. It's an architectural problem.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Judy Cook. Her show of recent paintings, Choose, is on from July 2nd to August 29th at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery. Your show also includes, there are lots of little works, some of them as small as your hand.
Right.
There's one called Ledge, which is three pieces that kind of stand out. They're more like a sculpture. Tell us about Ledge.
Ledge is a fairly long piece. It runs about six and a half feet long. And the pieces in it are all very different. There's a top, long, narrow kind of slat-like piece that rests on two other forms. And both of those forms were in the studio and had been previous paintings that I didn't like. And I took them out and made a combine of the three of them.
A combination of
a top piece that rested on two other pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those pieces are irregular. So it's not like a kind of ledge that you would necessarily, you know, run into, but it's a little quirky.
Is it a combine like Rauschenberg combine?
That's a very different, but his work had a big effect on me. Mm-hmm. I saw a great deal of his work in Boston because the print, the whole situation with prints changed drastically in the 60s.
It did?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I know he was using print. A lot of your work looks like it could be collage around the edges.
Right.
But
yeah. Well, he was collecting. I mean, he collected and had a great deal of debris. He was living in New York, for a long time, and picking things up off the street. And that whole recycling idea wasn't even called recycling. It was what he was doing with collage. Mm-hmm. And his collages moved really in a very important way from the wall to the floor. With some of the things I remember seeing them at MoMA, years ago.
So this combine, what do you think?
So that guy, I'm talking really about a combination of three elements. So I'm much closer to architecture there. Yeah, it wouldn't really refer in this respect to his work at all, I don't think.
So how is this like architecture?
Most of these things really start, a lot of the forms that I get made, some are long, smooth, and very minimal. And I lay them out on the floor when Chris Gander gets them to me. I really just mess around on the floor with them visually. A lot of ideas come out of that. I had a whole period of work where everything was stacked. I think that takes me back to childhood when in my family there was a very large box of wood blocks, the kind of thing that kids play with, particularly at that time. And I used to lay those out on the floor in patterns. I was probably about 7, 8, yeah. So I always kind of enjoyed that. And the fact that I came out of printmaking, you see, I did have a period of time where I was teaching myself kind of to paint, doing a lot of painting on canvas. But I went back to a harder surface, and I haven't gone back to canvas at all. It just wasn't, I think after printmaking and 4 years of etching, that hardness was like something I really responded to. But when I moved from Boston in 68 to here with my husband, Robert Hansen, I didn't feel I had the vocabulary for painting at that point at all in my life. Didn't really know a lot about color. And so that resulted in a lot of work of tarps. And the tarps came from the Schnitzer Marine Surplus. Mm-hmm. And they were sailors' bunk beds that I would get for 50 cents each, literally. So there were stacks of these.
Canvas with
They were
grommets.
Canvas tarps that the sailors at that time slept on in the ships. Okay. And so there were grommets all around the edges.
So there were hammocks, or were they?
Yeah, they would lay flat, but they would, these tarps were laced, into a metal surround to keep it taut, okay. And they
like
slept on. Yeah, exactly like a trampoline. So when I found them, I attached one to the other, and most of them were they all came at about 6'3" length. There was, they were always specific in length, but they were quite narrow because they weren't allowing these sailors much room, to roll around there. I would attach pieces of canvas to that, and then I would string them all together just with staples. Mm-hmm. So they were about 7 feet high.
So you were the only one working on tarp at the time?
Yeah, the whole reason for those tarps was that I wanted to have a very large surface that I could draw on, but I didn't want to be constrained by having to frame them. And so they rolled up very conveniently. It was just charcoal drawing on these tarps, not sometimes a little color. Mm-hmm. Portland Art Museum has one. Mm-hmm. And
it was always abstract drawing?
Yeah, it was. It was always about form.
Mm-hmm. And when you were teaching yourself to paint, were you painting in an abstract manner?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly not. I mean, in school, everything pretty much revolved around the figure. Mm-hmm. But the printmaking department at that time, it was like you were doing all this drawing, but then the printmaking department was actually very loose about the kinds of images that you did, you know, for etching or lithography, you know. And so that, for me, worked out very well because I had the kind of constraints of drawing. I mean, that was really, what would you say? They're different, they're judgments about drawing, you know. Does it really work? You know, how is the space filled? Illusional space, you have to deal with illusional space.
Illusion or allusion?
Well, illusion. Round, the figure in the round.
You live up by Northwest 23rd now. What do you remember Northwest 23rd when you moved here in the 60s?
Yeah, Bob and I moved here in 1968, and we rented a house in that neighborhood. Northwest 23rd was the cutoff for the industrial area, and there was no activity at all, you know, much beyond Northwest 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And Northwest 23rd itself had almost nothing on it except a few bars, mm-hmm. and then a bookstore that was great that came
in.
It was further, it was up by Lovejoy. Lovejoy bookstore or something.
So these were just regular houses. There weren't
so little by
shops.
Little. Well, it wasn't. There weren't any shops really mm-hmm. to speak of.
Was it a hippie area?
I think the housing around that area was still fairly inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it certainly was for us. We got a house in 73, however, and I'm still in the same house.
Mm-hmm. Well, was it a scene then? Or was it an art scene? Did you feel like there were other artists around? Was it just the
No, there was a very... The art community here was actually very strong. And PNCA, which was then the museum school, mm-hmm. Had a whole coterie of people that were serious teachers and very and wonderful students. Mm-hmm. I remember some really wonderful students. Some of them have remained, you know, in this community and other ones have taken off. But, it was pretty remarkable in that respect.
Tell us a bit about your studio where how old are you?
I'm going to be 75 in July.
And you're still painting all the time, basically, right? Every day?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 And you have a
home
studio?
It's a serious, yeah. No, the studio was built, my husband died in 2011, and we had built that studio about 4 years before. The studio that we shared for a very long time was really in the Pearl, down actually on front, first, you know, around that area, actually where Saturday Market is. And the building is now the white box, you know, where U of O architectural
the white
school.
Stag
yeah, the White Stag yeah. building. Yeah, that's the easiest identifier.
Yeah.
But that building had, let's see, 4 or 5 floors, I remember walking up those floors. Yep. There was an architectural group of architects on the third floor, I think, and then the fourth floor, there were a lot of artist studios.
Mm-hmm.
So
and you moved out of there when?
Oh, that was, man, like, you know, the studio, the, you know, I don't have a date on that,
mm-hmm.
but the building was sold. It was the Nidos that owned the building. And when they sold it, we had about a month to get out. And fortunately, Bob and I, knew about the, you know, I kept talking to the architects and below, you know, like, when do we have to move? And, you know, we started really making a plan for the backyard, basically. And my studio's now, it's a 40-foot long space, but it's really a shoebox. So it's mm-hmm. 16 feet wide and then 16 feet high. And the light comes in on the studio all around, kind of on the right side of it, east side.
So you
actually
had this built in the backyard of your house.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Built for you or for both of you?
Oh, for both of us. We'd always shared a studio.
Oh, right.
And it worked out very well because Bob was painting before, but at the point we moved, he was really doing drawings all the time. So the model could come and he could be working, you know, he would be working on an easel looking at the model. I could be working in another part, and it was, you know, it was never a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've always really been an abstract artist. Why abstraction?
I think it just evolved for me. I've always been interested in form, and a lot of the shapes of the outside shapes of these wooden forms, actually the shape itself becomes a kind of conversation inside that painting.
So some of the shapes,
the inside,
I should say,
the outside becomes the inside.
So they're not square. They have like a piece, you
yeah,
know,
they're
corner
angled.
That sticks out.
That's right.
And your work, often there's lines that go around the edge.
The edge.
And the edges are pretty thick, like 3 or 4 inches.
No, so. Not 3 or 4. No, 2 inches.
2 inches.
Always 2 inches.
Oh, is that a
yes.
thing?
Yes. And that's another, you know, formal constraint on the work. So the 5-inch squares that are in the studio for this show are 2 inches. But when you go to the bigger work, you'll see it's actually the same thickness that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But the sensation of that is very different if you're paying attention to it.
So you
and it may not interest, it may not be something that really strikes anybody about it, but to me it was kind of a revelation when I did the very small pieces. I realized I didn't want a 5-inch square that was thicker than 2 inches, actually. That's the smallest I've ever worked, I think.
So abstraction for you is not a style. It wasn't a thing that appeared in the middle of the 20th century and had its life.
It's how you look at the world. I mean, there's form everywhere in the world. I mean, of different shapes, different sizes, different textures of things. I think it's observation. I think people observe differently.
Mm-hmm.
And also, abstraction gives you a kind of compression of that form because you have to make an experience out of it. Otherwise, it's what? Nothing.
What do you mean, make an experience?
You have an experience when you look at a painting. You become involved with a painting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at a painting, it seems to me, I mean, there are spatial relationships that you have to observe. There's a palette. The artist chose certain colors. I think the color interest that painting has for a lot of people is very emotive, actually, on the part of the public.
Does that discipline apply in other areas of life for you? I mean, I don't just mean, you know, the way you decorate your house. I mean, the way you approach, like, personal relationships or the way you view politics or something like that.
No, I think it's just, I mean, a studio practice is a studio practice. And my studio is very quiet. Once I'm in the studio, I can either, you know, play music, not play music, and just sit, you know, and look at my work and then get involved with my work.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends that are painters, whether they're abstract or not, seem to have a lot of that same experience. So there's a lot of shared conversation with painters.
And do you aim to reproduce the feeling you have while you're painting in the viewer?
You don't control your viewer. You don't control your audience. You know? I mean, some people are really interested in abstraction and they have a lot of reasons to be interested. And I think other parts of an audience are like, look, if I don't really recognize what this is, you know, I'm not going to be wasting a lot of time with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it really does take a long time painting to really know anything about painting. I mean, really, I just feel at this point, even my life, like I've only touched on, you know, a few things that they were interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
do you have the same feelings as you work as you did when you were like a young girl?
I think you still have a lot of the same emotive feelings. Yeah. It's really a very different process. I feel very free, actually, at this point in my life to just do whatever I'm going to do with painting and work, because your time's shorter. You ought to be concerned, at this point, with just what I want to do.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Judy Cook. Her show of recent paintings, called Choose, runs from July 2nd to August 29th at the Elizabeth Leach Gallery in the Pearl. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO, Judy.
Thanks.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol's silver screen can't tell him apart at all.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be the sponsor of the 28th Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 2nd through the 5th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Blues Festival includes cruises like the Blue Bayou Cruise, the Rock the Boat Dance Cruise, Drifting Blues Cruise, and the Sail On Sister Cruise, as well as after-hour performances featuring